At 4:20 or so, the TV upstairs in the common room suddenly went goofy. By 4:40, the temperature in Shed B had dropped to 49 degrees. At 4:50, Curtis Wilcox shouted, "It's starting! I hear it!" Sandy had been inside to check on dispatch, and what a snafu it was by then. Nothing but one big balls-to-the-wall roar of static. And when Kurt yelled, he was returning across the parking lot, where there were now so many personals, you would have thought it was the police benefit rummage sale or the muscular dystrophy kids' carnival they put on each July. Sandy broke into a run, cutting through the knot of spectators craning to look in through the side door, which was still unbelievably standing wide open. And Kurt was there, standing in it. Waves of cold were rolling out, but he seemed not to feel them. His eyes were huge, and when he turned to Sandy, he was like a man dreaming. "Do you see it?" "Sandy, do you see it?" Of course he did. A waxing violet glow that was spilling out of the car's windows and seeping up through the crack which outlined the trunk lid and went spilling down the Buick sides like some thin radioactive fluid. Inside the car, Sandy could clearly see the shapes of the seats and the oversized steering wheel. They were outlines, silhouettes. The rest of the cabin was swallowed in a cold, purple glare, brighter than any furnace. The hum was loud and getting louder. It made Sandy's skull ache, made his ears almost wish they were deaf. Not that being deaf would do any good, because you seemed to hear that sound not just with your ears, but with your whole body. Sandy yanked Kurt out onto the pavement, then grabbed the knob, meaning to shut the door. Kurt took hold of his wrist. "No, Sandy, no! I want to see it! I want—" Sandy peeled his hand off, not gently. "Are you crazy? There's a procedure we follow on this, a goddamn procedure. No one should know that better than you. You help think it up, for God's sake." When Sandy slammed the door shut, cutting off any direct view of the Buick, Kurt's eyelids fluttered, and he twitched like a man waking out of a deep sleep. "Okay," he said. "Okay, boss. I'm sorry. It's all right." Not really believing it was, because the damn fool would have stood right there in the doorway. No question about it in Sandy's mind. Would have stood there and been fried, if frying was on that thing's agenda. "I need to get my goggles," Kurt said. "They're in the trunk of my car. I have extras and they're extra dark, a whole box of them. Do you want a pair?" Sandy still got the feeling that Kurt wasn't fully awake, that he was only pretending, like you did when the telephone rang in the middle of the night. "Sure, why not? But we're going to be cautious, right? Because this is looking like a bad one." "Looking like a great one," he said, and the exuberance in his voice, although slightly scary, made Sandy feel a little better. At least Kurt didn't sound as if he was sleepwalking any longer. "But yes, Mother, we'll follow procedure and be as cautious as hell." He ran for his car, not the cruiser, but his personal, the restored Bel Air, and opened the trunk. He was still rummaging in the boxes of stuff he kept back there when the Buick exploded.